Welcome to A Five-Step Framework to Approach Difficult Conversations, Episode 57 of Co-Creating Peace, a series about conscious communication and conflict transformation. I'm Kathleen Alwigon. Today, I'm joined by Jerry Fu, a conflict resolution coach who helps Asian American leaders advance in their career and life journeys. Jerry will share with us his five-step framework to approach difficult conversations and some examples of how he has used it in situations he's faced and in his leadership coaching. But first, the quote for today. Today's quote is by Henry Ford. Whether you think you can or you can't, you're right. Prior to starting his coaching business, Jerry Fu served as a pharmacist and began facilitating leadership workshops in 2012. Jerry started coaching in 2017 to help other Asian American professionals deal with the conflict they encounter at work, with their culture, and within themselves. Today, Jerry offers a range of coaching services, which include individual coaching, group workshops, and keynote presentations. Jerry, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, Kathleen. Excited to be here.
You know, Jerry, one of my many wishes for the betterment of humanity is that there would be more people out there teaching people conflict resolution and coaching them through the conflict dynamics that they struggle with. One of the many reasons I wanted to have you on Co-Creating Peace is because I know that you're doing exactly that. So what got you into coaching?
Yeah, it was definitely an interesting transition from my day job as a pharmacist. Basically, I first got into coaching when I was asked to help teach a leadership seminar through a pharmacy leadership nonprofit in 2012. And at the time, I'd gone through some really crazy job transitions. I actually got fired from the job I moved to Houston for, and then ended up at an independent pharmacy house of cards where four of my paychecks bounced, and I didn't know how to confront the boss. He was clearly ripping me off. And after I got out of that job, got on with another one through that helped with some other friends, but they couldn't pay me more than 8 hours a week. So I was at a very vulnerable point when my friends reached out to me to teach leadership. And basically, since I started helping them, my pharmacy career got a lot better because I was taking on leadership positions, so it saved my career. And then afterwards, I realized that after enough job challenges where the companies were still failing, basically, I wanted to turn around and develop people the same way I wish I'd been developed when I was trying to become a more effective leader in my career.
You've alluded to it a little bit, but I'd love to hear a little bit more about why focus on conflict resolution as part of the leadership skills.
Part of it, I joke to say, sometimes I didn't choose it, but it chose me. And I say that because a lot of my growth as a leader came about when I was trying to initiate and navigate difficult conversations more effectively. Because I grew up in a conflict-averse household where we were told just to don't bring up difficult issues. I work for a chain pharmacy where, you know, I was just supposed to placate patients even if their demands are unreasonable. Even people who would cite religious scripture even saying, hey, you know, you're just supposed to roll over and be meek. I just learned to take the path of least resistance because I just wasn't in the mood to deal with it. It was really frustrating for sure, because when I became a leader and I was just trying to avoid losing popularity points and things like that, you realize very quickly that that doesn't work in leadership. If someone is not performing up to standard, it is your responsibility as leader to bring up the discrepancy between your expectations and their current work performance. If someone needs to be fired, you would initially hesitate to do the right and difficult thing. You're just letting bad garbage fester in your workplace because now everyone else is upset that you're not dealing with the problem. And then now I might lose my job because I am not doing the right thing to get rid of the problematic people. And so this struggle became a fascination. And as I started to experiment with my approach and got more success with it, now I'm able to turn around and help other people so that I can't spare them from their challenges as leaders, but I can help them feel a little more prepared when they need to do the right and necessary difficult thing.
Well, and it's true that one aspect of leadership that is often challenging for people is the difficult conversations that we have to have as leaders. And you pointed that out so well. And avoiding conflict doesn't make conflict go away. And as you're pointing out, other negative consequences happen when we avoid having that conversation about something that's not working right. And when we don't have that conversation, we're also sending the message that what's not working right is actually okay. okay because we're not talking about it. But so many people are like your family was, they're conflict adverse. And similarly, we don't get taught how to manage conflict well or how to talk about it in a productive way. And so when people try to address conflict, they do it ineptly and sometimes harmfully. So yes, learning those skills are so important and how wise of you to have that insight about yourself and proactively develop those skills. So you've mentioned difficult conversations. What framework do you use to navigate difficult conversations?
I'll tell a story and I'll overlay the 5-step framework that I use to help people get through situations like this. So at one point, I served as a church class director. And my second day on the job, I was told by one of the women in my class that a newer guy in the class was sexually harassing women in the class. And they said, well, Jerry, you got to handle it. And it's my second day on the job. Like, you know, I don't have a manual. I don't have any other kind of guidance. Who's going to help me through this? And so the framework that I used was first to imagine what a successful conversation could sound like. So we'll call this guy Nick. When I call up Nick, I think about, okay, how could this go well? You know, it could be simple as bringing up the situation, getting his feedback, giving him recommendations, and hopefully that would be enough. I'd like to believe that there is a chance that it could be that easy. It probably isn't, but at least instead of going and being like, oh, I don't know how this is going to go, but all right, pessimism doesn't help me here. The second step is to initiate the conversation with 10 seconds of courage. Because if I wait until I feel courageous enough to finally have that conversation, it may never happen. And this isn't something I can put off for a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks, right? People are getting hurt by his actions. So I just need to stretch myself for 10 seconds so that I can just get the ball rolling and lock the gate behind me so I can't backtrack. So now I've reached out to him. He's willing to talk. Step 3 is to script the critical moves. What do I do in case he pushes back or denies the allegations that are in question? So now I have to think, if he just denies it, I need to have a response ready for that. So now I'm going to briefly organize my thoughts on paper, ideally, and just to say, okay, what are some things I need to address? I need to address the situation. I need to anticipate his responses. I need to have a recommendation in place for him so that things can give me the best chance of moving forward. Step 4 is to rehearse those critical moves. All right, let me go ahead and say these things out loud. How does it come across? Is my tone confident? Let me check myself in the mirror if I have one. Just say, hey, you know, is my posture good? And then step 5 is to do it. I can't afford not to engage. The cost of inaction is worse than the cost of trying and failing. That was a big, big turning point for me in realizing, hey, conflict resolution, as we talked about earlier, if we don't engage it, it's like a fire you're not putting out. If you wait, the fire's only going to get bigger. And when we use that analogy, everyone says, oh, of course it makes sense. Yeah, put out the fire. But people treat conflict like this and they treat it as a fire that they don't need to put out. So in my response to Nick in this case, I had to position myself as a guide and I would tell him, okay, one of 3 possibilities is true. 1, you are right and they are wrong. You're telling me the truth. They're just apparently misunderstanding what you thought was funny. They thought was inappropriate. Just go clear it up with them. Make sure it doesn't happen again and everything's good. Possibility number 2, they are right and you are wrong, which means you are lying to me. And that means you're actually sexually harassing them. You need to go to them, apologize, make sure it doesn't happen again. And we're going to keep a close eye on you. Or finally, possibility number 3, you insist on your innocence. They insist they are right. And now it's your word against theirs, which means now I have to ask you to leave because I've known them longer than I've known you. And so now he realizes, hey, Jerry's not gunning for me or trying to pin me or embarrass me. He really is just trying to help me navigate the situation well. He wants me to be a part of the class and he's being very clear with his expectations. I wouldn't have gotten to that point if I had just said, well, you know, I'm just going to ask you to leave because we can't have this. That could have been one possible outcome. Thankfully, with the 5-step framework, now we're able to have some actual dialogue and productive ideas because now he realizes, oh, Jerry's trying to collaborate on the solution with me instead of just twist my arm into apologizing.
I love that 5-step approach. And I have to ask, how did things turn out with Nick?
Well, the good news is that he realized he has to go sort out what's causing problems. Unfortunately, after that, it was clear that option 2 was the actual correct situation. And unfortunately, after conversation, the woman who first made me aware of the situation told me, I talked to him, he was still being inappropriate. So we never saw him again after that.
Interesting.
And yet, even though it didn't turn out necessarily as happily ever after, with Nick still being able to be there and the behavior being more appropriate and so forth, the approach that you took didn't escalate the conflict. And eventually, it sounds like everyone's needs were met, even though it might not have been the quote unquote highest ideal of everybody all being able to stay there and work together in a good way. The woman who was being violated by the inappropriate behavior got her needs met. The organization got its needs met because the behavior was no longer present, because Nick was no longer present. And I'm guessing that in a way, Nick's needs got met too. He left and found an environment, hopefully he found an environment where he fits in better. And maybe along the way, because of the care and the thought that you gave to that conversation, hopefully that planted some seeds of wisdom in him because of the way that you approached it and helped him feel safe in having the conversation, so that maybe down the road somewhere those seeds of wisdom will sprout and he'll understand what went wrong and what he needs to do differently in the future. And so I think one of the most important things about approaching a conversation as thoughtfully as you did, I think one of the most important things about having those kinds of conversations is helping the recipient feel safe hearing it, so that even if they don't respond in the best way that we had hoped for, like I said, hopefully there were some seeds of wisdom planted that will sprout because they didn't have to put their shields up to protect themselves from your attack against them for being so wrong. I appreciate that so much, the way that you approach that.
How would I want someone to approach me dealing with this, right? And that helps give you some, maybe some thoughtfulness in the approach, even if it is a difficult subject. And I hope people realize, hey, you know what? Not every successful situation means restoring a relationship to 100%. Sometimes it means coming to a truce. Sometimes it means, hey, the most loving thing I can do for you right now, Jerry, is to fire you, right? That's what happened to me. Even though I tell people, I'm like, look, I don't get Christmas cards from the company anymore. I get it. You know, that bridge is kind of burned. But at the same time, I understand that the most loving thing they could do for me in that moment is to tell me, hey, you are not meeting expectations. We've given you more than enough chances to improve and we're still not seeing a return. Then we're just going to have to part ways. And yeah, ideally with Nick, if he is wise, my hope is that he takes this feedback in humility and it's up to him ultimately to decide whether or not he wants to receive this lesson and just and trust that it's helpful.
Well, yes. And if he continues the behavior, he will probably get the lesson more than once. And sometimes that's what we need too, is to get a lesson repeatedly before it really sinks in and we can implement it in our future behavior. And I also want to acknowledge, Jerry, a couple of things that you said. I love that 10 seconds of courage. I have never thought of it that way. I really appreciate that because it can be a frightening thing to have to approach a difficult conversation. And especially on your second day on the job, having to have a sexual harassment conversation. Wow, what a way to start out. But that 10 minutes of courage, you're right, that gives us the momentum to move forward from there. And I always tell people that courage is not the absence of fear. Courage is the strength to move through the fear to where you need to be. Mm-hmm. And that 10 seconds is beautiful. And then also a couple of other things. When you talked about the forethought and planning that you gave to the conversation, and that's something that I talk about very early in this podcast series. I did one episode on conscious communication. And one of my steps in conscious communication is defining the goal for the outcome and then planning the steps to achieve that goal. And so while you didn't actually talk about the planning the goal for the outcome, it was implied in what you said, and carefully thinking about what are the next steps to take in order to get from where we are to where my ideal is of where we would be. And then the other piece I just wanted to acknowledge was talking about putting yourself in their shoes and bringing empathy into the delivery. There's so much wisdom in everything you shared, Jerry.
Yeah, sure thing.
I know one of the things that you do out there in the world is you help coach Asian American leaders in how to approach conflict and how to resolve conflict. And of course, since COVID came about in early 2020, we've seen some highly inappropriate escalations of bias toward Asian Americans. And I don't know how much that ties into the work that you do with Asian American leaders. Talk a little bit about that reality and the work that you do.
Yeah. So the situations that my clients have come to me for have not involved direct situations of racial disparagement or injustice or slurs or anything like that. But I believe the principles behind resolving a conflict in those challenges is still common, right? There is a desire to say, hey, this situation is not okay. And I want to be able to share my thoughts and my voice without escalating the situation. You want to find that balance between saying, hey, I'm not going to condone this. And in love, I'm still going to trust that we're both going to find and agree on a higher standard to show respect between us and have a healthy relationship. And so I'll give a situation where Asians may or may not feel like they can speak up. So one of my clients got a call from her boss after hours. She didn't pick up because she was off the clock and she felt like anything that he could call me about, we can just handle tomorrow. Unfortunately for her, the next day, the boss, who's very temperamental, passive aggressive, you know, blew up at her. And he was like, I don't think you're all that committed to the job. I needed to talk to you. Why didn't you pick up the phone? That was entirely disrespectful. And so she comes to me and she's asking me, how do I engage this guy, not let this resentment sit in my chest? At the same time, I don't want to lose my job because I'm afraid I might set him off further. So we walk her through some of the things in this framework. Know what you can apologize for. Hey, I'm sorry things aren't better between us. I want to be the best worker I can be for you. And I want to make sure situations like this don't come up. Even as I have time off the clock where I have other personal commitments that I might not be available to respond to you while I'm in the middle of these commitments. So how can I work with you better so that we can honor both my time that's personal for personal use, but also demonstrate that I'm still committed to this job? When I was at a networking event, an older white gentleman asked me if the Asian hate crimes were simply a media sensation where they're just trying to get ratings for themselves, or if it really was a situation where it was so bad that I myself was dealing with racial taunts and insults and physical violence. And so what do I do with that situation? Do I take it as, oh, he's genuinely curious to see and make sure that I'm okay despite all the problems? Or is he implying that it's not that big a deal as media is singing out to be? And so for me, right, in my mind, I thought to myself, well, you know, people are dying. This is not a thing that they're exaggerating. But to stretch the situation a little bit, I told him, I said, well, hey, let me see what you think of this. And I said, did you know that Houston's Chinatown is built on discrimination? And he goes, what do you mean by that? I said, well, you know, at one point, all the city officials were mistrustful of the Asians in the city. And so they sequestered them all into the southwest part of the city. And then to add insult to injury, they divide up the voting district in such a way where they don't even have a vote. He goes, huh? And I said, yeah. So now they have no political leverage despite being collectively together. Yeah. And so I said, well, you know, on one hand, I'm thankful that I myself have not dealt with any insults or wounds of any physical kind. But there's a greater system of discrimination in place that is not okay just because more people aren't getting hurt by it. And so these are the kind of things I hope every Asian can feel confident to express whenever they're in situations where they suspect that there is some kind of prejudice or racism at hand, whether it's visible or kind of behind the scenes.
I completely agree. And I love the way that you coached that woman to negotiate a win-win with her boss. And the whole idea of, I recognize that you have needs and I need you to recognize that I also have needs. And what kind of agreements can we come to meet both of our needs to the best of our ability? And I think that's so very important. And enlightening people in the way that you did with that man to help him recognize that there are hidden and historic discrimination that we don't even recognize. The idea of Houston Chinatown being created because that community was sequestered away from others, that wouldn't have been anything that I would ever have imagined. You know, and I wonder if that's true of other immigrant communities as well. I always thought that people just clustered together because there were more people around them that had the same kind of cultural background or spoke the same language from birth, those kinds of things. And to hear that kind of grouping of people might have been something forced against their will and then further used as a way to disempower them from having a voice, my chest hurts as I'm thinking about what you said. It's so very sad. And I really appreciate that you bring that up because I've just been enlightened about experiences that I didn't know people had. And so thank you for that.
Yeah, you're welcome. There's been some ongoing trends where the history books that kids have in school, right? There's like two paragraphs on, oh yeah, there's this Chinese Exclusion Act, but that's really not the most important thing. The Japanese internment camps during World War II. Yeah, you know, we really rather not talk about those. Mm-hmm. But I would love to see a history book that really showed not only the triumphs of America, but also their greatest struggles and failures so that people can take a look at all the evidence and make a judgment for themselves as to what they can celebrate, but also what they can work on as we try to keep this country a place where we want more immigrants, because that's how we get more color, more diversity, and more knowledge, because the more global the nation is, the more opportunities we have to understand and appreciate differences.
Absolutely. And I also would love to see history not only reveal the struggles and the challenges and the incredibly tragic mistakes that human beings have made in the ways that we have treated one another, but also about the triumphs through adversity that have emerged from that as well. You know, there's also the movement out there to try to deny the Holocaust or minimize the Holocaust and compare it to wearing masks and things like that, which one politician did. And out of that, I have also heard some of the most amazing stories and read some of the most amazing stories about how the Jewish people persevered through that and helped each other and supported each other. That's also a beautiful story that I think needs to be shared, because humanity is so very cruel to one another in our ignorance and in our struggles for power and strength and prosperity and all of those things. We're incredibly cruel to one another. And we need to remind ourselves not to be that way. And the only way to do that is to admit and explore history as opposed to push it under the rug. And then similarly, I think we need to be inspired by the positive ways that people respond to that experience, where they help each other, where they become wiser, where they become stronger, where they triumph over their oppressors. I think all of that needs to be shared as the full gamut of human history and human experience so that we never again repeat those mistakes.
Yeah, I think that's a great thought to meditate on and elaborate on, because yeah, on one hand, you know, we're only as strong as our adversity makes us, right? But that doesn't mean we condone the adversity when there's oppressive governments out there and ignorance a lot still propagating in news circles and social media and things like that. And at the same time, we want to get to a point where we won't even have to worry about whether or not we have to fear anything when it comes to trying to educate people correctly and not only just give them information, but give them an inspiration to say, hey, you know what? In humility, I'm going to admit that I have prejudice against certain races due to either family history. I knew a pharmacy student who's a Russian Jew, and she would talk about some of the oppression that she dealt with as her parents immigrated to the U.S. So yeah, there's no shortage of history to learn from, and it is ultimately our choice whether or not to learn from it.
Exactly so. And from that, hopefully, there would come empathy and wisdom and new and better ways of being with one another, all of which helps our evolution as a species, as does the diversity that you were talking about earlier, that the more that we learn about other cultures, the more that we learn about other people, the more that we learn about ourselves and our own biases as well. But all of that helps us to become a stronger species. And we not only survive in the presence of diversity, we actually can thrive and evolve the more that we embrace diversity. Thank you so much. There's so much wisdom that you have given us today. Very much appreciate it. And keep up the good work out there in the world, Jerry. Thank you.
Thank you.
To learn more about Jerry Fu and his work, visit www.adaptingleaders.com. There are several ways that you can help co-creating peace stay strong and live long with your financial support, your contributions to the content, and by sharing co-creating peace with others. Your financial support will allow me to contract a production assistant to help with the editing of this podcast, which in turn will support my work-life balance by allowing me 1, maybe even 2 days off per week. Currently, between my company Bridges of Peace and this podcast, I work 7 days a week to provide my services. Become a patron of Co-Creating Peace by going to www.patreon.com/co-creating-peace. That's patreon.com/co-creating-peace with no hyphen in co-creating. Patrons pledging $10 or more per month will receive thank you gifts ranging from communication worksheets and workbooks to free communication coaching sessions with me and Co-Creating Peace t-shirts, coffee mugs, and tote bags. To contribute to the content of this podcast, send me your requests for advice about conscious communication or conflict transformation. I will honor whatever level of confidentiality you want in my response. If you have ideas for episodes of this podcast or specific things you'd like to learn about conscious communication and conflict transformation, that will be a helpful contribution to the content as well. Many episode topics and guests were suggested by listeners like you. Write to me with any questions you may have about anything I've shared with you. I will reply within 2 business days. I want this show to have a direct and positive impact on your life. The best way to reach me is to email me at owegon@bridgesofpeace.com. That's owegon@bridgesofpeace.com. You'll be able to hear a new episode of Co-Creating Peace every weekend. This episode of Co-Creating Peace has been brought to you by the patrons who support Co-Creating Peace through Patreon.com and by Bridges of Peace, providing mediation, facilitation, training, and communication coaching services throughout the U.S. and around the world. Learn more about Bridges of Peace by visiting www.bridgesofpeace.com. Thank you for listening, and may you always find new ways to co-create peace in your life.